Welcome to Built in the Bluegrass, a podcast dedicated to cool stuff made in Kentucky. We want to share with you how it was made, why it was made, and the story behind it. And now, here's your host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Built in the Bluegrass. We have a topic that many of you have heard about in Kentucky in particular, as well as all over the country. And there's lots of misconceptions, correct conceptions maybe, or interpretations that we need to go over today, and just want to hit on all of those items. And what I'm speaking of is the hemp business, or as we've referred to as the plant-based food ingredients, plant protein agribusiness. There's numerous names we're going to use today, but let's start with an introduction of our guest today. We have Chad Rosen with Victory Hemp, which is located in Louisville, Kentucky, from a corporate perspective, and then also have a facility in Carrollton, Kentucky. So, Chad, welcome. Thanks for being on the show today. Just wanted to give a quick introduction, but if you would like to add a few things to that and give us a brief background on you, that maybe will be a way to get us started.
Oh boy. All right. Well, yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys shining some light on what we're doing here, Griffin. As you said, my name's Chad Rosen. We have a company called Victory Hemp Foods. We're a B2B food ingredient manufacturer. So what that essentially means is we use the hemp seed, right? So we take hemp seeds in from farmers, combine grade hemp seeds, and then we convert them into high concentration proteins and clarified vegetable oils, as well as sugars. And we're getting that all out of the little tiny hemp seed. Hemp was legalized under the 2014 Farm Bill. And so we process it into all these products at our food grade manufacturing facility in Carrollton, Kentucky. And as you said, we have labs and offices down here in Louisville.
Awesome. So what is the allure of hemp? Like why does hemp come across right as, how is it better than other ingredients, whether it's something that gets a bad name like high fructose corn syrup or something that has a, you know, maybe a different reputation such as the soybean? Yet, what is hemp? I mean, is it that plentiful? Is it that it packs that much protein punch? Like, what is it that makes hemp even a viable option for this?
I mean, that's a great question. The why is why we're here. But it means different things to different people, right? It means different things to the supply chain. It means different things for the consumer. And it means different things for our state economy, right? So it's a new crop. It's been under the potato basket for the last 80 years since the Marijuana Tax Act basically taxed out of existence and then coupled it with marijuana and from a legislative standpoint, when they made it legal, we'd realized and we had been importing it for years and years and years. So it's got a lot of functional characteristics that interact with markets. But why is it better, right? And it's a little bit of what can we do with it? And then why is it better? There's a lot of things you can do with the hemp plant. You can extract the resin out of the flowers and create medicinal products. You can strip the fibers off of the stalks and create wovens and technical non-wovens like insulation and textiles. And then you can take the seeds and you can produce really highly functional ingredients like protein and lipids from the hemp seed. So, you know, we look at the plant as, and a lot of people get all excited about, well, cannabis and sexy, or they might think, you know, there might be some reefer madness. There might be some personal perceptions around what it is and what it isn't. Like you said, early on, we just look at it as an oil seed here at Victory Hemp Foods, right? We take that little seed, and we consider it similar to like soy or canola or sunflower seeds. And we convert it into ingredients that formulators can use, to create downstream food products. But what and why is it better? That's the big question. That's the most important part of the equation. And from through the process that we've developed at our in our labs here that we deployed it on our manufacturing floor up in Carrollton, we're able to create proteins and oils that work better for formulators. We haven't done anything with the seed in terms of modifying it to work with the market, but the hemp seed innately is ideal for human health and nutrition. And that's not from me. That's from decades upon decades of third party peer reviewed white papers and scientific journals that are citing the research that dietitians are done. There's all 9 essential amino acids. It's incredible for gut health. It's incredible for brain health. It's incredible for heart health. And it's an essential part of our diet, right? We need amino acids to survive. A lot of them we can't make ourselves, so we have to incorporate them through our diets. And so what we do at Victory is we make this incredibly nutritious and product very delicious, and we make it so that customers like the Yum group can make a plant-based chicken nugget that a consumer wouldn't be able to tell whether it came from something that clucked or it was just a seed that was hanging on a hemp plant.
So you talked about what all you don't know, or is this the right thing? You know, we're comparing it to soy or corn or some of the other things out there. What do you know? So is it easy to grow in Kentucky? Do we have a lot of it? Does it come from a situation where it doesn't need a lot of water? Like, what makes it sustainable from a business perspective to where you've at least invested as much as you have so far? Like, what do you know? What has made you go down this path? Is it the taste? Is it the abilities of how it can do separate things? You know, walk us through why you know this and why that makes sense.
What we know is we know that the market is expanding dramatically for plant-based proteins. They're expecting that the market's going to be upwards of $127 billion for plant-based proteins in the future. There's a considerable amount of pressure on resources, natural resources, including water, including arable land, including soil. And we're going to have a really tough time feeding the 10 billion people on the planet by 2050 if we're using animals to get us there. So we need some alternative proteins. And what we know about these hemp proteins is that they're ideal for human health and nutrition. We also know that the formulators that we've been trialing with, and we've been trialing with formulators from El Segundo all the way out to Switzerland, absolutely love the way our product performs. It has incredible water binding characters, water and oil binding characteristics. It has great ability to wet extrude, foam, all these kind of characteristics that are important to formulators. If you look upstream to the supply chain, what we need to do is build out that supply chain. And that's what we've been doing since our politicians passed this legislation that allowed us to grow and process hemp seeds, start all the way back in 2014. And that's been the process of getting the supply chain under us. There is not nearly as much. We grow 180 million acres of corn and soy in the U.S. today. The supply chain for hemp is less than 20,000 acres, right? So in Canada, the max that they've grown has been 100,000 acres. So we are, as Dr. David Williams used to say, who is a professor that led the hemp program at University of Kentucky, and we work in his memory and his honor in a lot of ways. One of the things he said, that the hemp right now is like a grain of sand on the beach of agriculture, and that's largely true. But it's an opportunity to reinvent a supply chain that's been really deleterious from an environmental perspective with in chemical intensive agriculture. And so we're getting to know what the agronomic features are and work closer with those.
So do you feel like you're competing with soy, corn, other things that came before you? So two questions here. Do you feel like you're competing with that? And how hard is it going to be to disrupt that business that already exists? I mean, we've had numerous talks on here about fuel and the replacements of it and different batteries doing this. And there's always something that you're fighting the status quo. So are you replacing it? Do you feel like it'll run alongside of it? Is it your competition? And then why should you? Why should you make it and the other one shouldn't? Or is it, you know, we just want to get a bigger market share because we want to be part of feeding 10 billion people?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about enormous markets, right? So, and scaling into those enormous markets, I don't think that it's not going to replace, it's going to complement. And that's what formulators are doing today, these food formulators. They're using a variety of plant-based ingredients to diversify their supply chains, make sure that there's redundancy, and create better products. And they do that through combination of plant proteins. So I don't think that, you know, as the population explodes, you're not going to see any sort of it's either soy or it's hemp, you're going to see a complementation with peas, with chickpeas, with soybeans, etc. We have unique characteristics and features that soybeans don't. Soybeans have unique characteristics that hemp seeds don't. So it's not an either or, it's a finding the best product for the application. And hemp happens to have an enormous amount of unique functions that work for formulators.
So as a compliment and your last example there, you see it as more, we're really good for, let's say fake chicken sandwich, but we're better for this type of product than that. This one that flavored is here, or someone who needs this type of diet, you feel it as you're going to not fill every segment, which soy largely has filled a lot of segments, but more you're filling particular segments of the food supply chain.
That's right. And, again, it goes back to what those characteristics are and how they fit with the end user's appetite for what those products are. In a lot of cases, the gap that's been created by soy has been because of the allergen aspect, has been because of the PR backlash that's associated with phytoestrogens, which, right or wrong, consumers have a perception that soy protein isn't good for them if they've had a bout of cancer, they have cancer in their family, right? Those are, and whether or not that's correct or not, it doesn't make a difference. Consumer perception is what it is, and the marketplace will determine if that's something that some folks won't care and some folks will. And so in the event that they don't, they do care, there's an alternative for them. And so food manufacturers are globbing on to non-allergenic products like hemp seeds to utilize in their products to work with those consumers. And I think to give them a product that they're looking for. And that's also, that relates to a number of different attributes that the hemp seed creates. We're seeing a lot of formulators that will put hemp on the front of the bag saying, hey, we're using hemp seed protein in our products. And then on the back of the label, it's probably the sixth ingredient down the list, but it has this marketing cachet because it's the forbidden fruit, because there's a perception that hemp is really, really, really good for them, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of the day, we're using an enormous amount of proteins. So for the volume that those tertiary ingredients can play as a position, we're okay with that based on the fact that we don't really have a supply chain that's robust enough to support and take over the entire plant protein market. We'll slowly and continuously build out our supply chain to accommodate that growth. But for today, using it as somewhat of a marketing cachet and a smaller percentage across a wide variety of products is good for us.
So back to perception is reality in the eye of the consumer. Hemp is weed. That's what I see every day. That's what I remember. That's why it was labeled for years. Is that not true?
I don't think that's true. That's true. That's true in the high school parking lot, maybe. But as you grow up a little bit and you start to define what nutrition is and where you can get your nutrients and how you're going to live a long, healthy life, and you're going to and eat healthy foods, you're starting to look at the list of all your options. And hopefully that educational program will come around to show you that, there's terrific attributes associated with it. So it really comes down to the conscientious consumer. Those are the people that are really concerned with what the products are. Those are the same consumers that are really curious or purchasing products based on a label, based on a USDA organic label, or based on a non-GMO label. Those are the ones that are asking the questions. And the same customers that are asking the questions are the same ones that are going to glob on to reach for hemp, because they've done their research and they see that it has more protein, has a better balanced profile of amino acids than any other protein on the market, up there really close to what animal proteins are offering. So the truth shines through, but perception is reality, and we can't, that's just an educational program that I think that, once we get a checkoff program and there's some real dollars behind explaining to consumers what hemp is and what hemp isn't on a mass basis, so they understand when they get to Walmart, then we start to find ourselves in a position where we're going to get to that wide adoption. But before then, we're still, as I said, at early innings in the hemp space, hemp ecosystem, and supply is still constricted. So I'm not too worried about reaching those consumers that think hemp is weed.
So let's talk about the, whenever this maybe happened in 2014, or there was, you know, in Kentucky, we saw a lot of people come from a hemp perspective. They were going to grow a lot of hemp, and we saw a large influx of at least hemp activity. I think we've largely seen a lot of those restrict what they were doing, and some of them go belly up. So what is it about what happened with that market? And, you know, what are you doing to ensure that that's not the case going forward? Was that just a CBD oil perspective? Was that, you know, tell me a little bit about why that isn't the case going forward, or is it?
Well, look, again, it's early innings, and every industry that starts out is going to have winners and losers. If you look back at what the petroleum industry did in the days of Rockefeller, and the Standard Oil Company, there were thousands and thousands of oil companies that didn't make it that got snuffed out. And so anytime industry starting up and changing directions and has murky regulations and is developing a supply chain, there's going to be winners, there's going to be losers, and there's going to be a lot of attrition. There's going to be a lot of consolidation. And we're going through that period right now. I think one of the biggest challenges is that we face as an industry is we're all so passionate about this hemp plant, right? It's and there's a lot of quote unquote charlatans in the space that are so passionate about it and think that it's a panacea for so many challenges that we face, whether it's family farmers, whether it's farm income, whether it's healthy eating, whether it's individuality and being able to utilize plants for wellness. All those aspects kind of play into this narrative that has a lot of folks out there, constituents, make them very passionate about what this plant can do and what the plant can't do. One thing that we need to do as an industry is ground ourselves in the reality of the unit economics and the market size. If you look at the CBD industry, if Griffin, if you and me and let's just say all of North America, 100% of North Americans, 360 million people, all took double the recommended daily dosage of 100 milligrams of CBD a day. And I don't know that that's the recommended daily dosage, but it fits to stand. That's a lot of CBD from what I understand about how much CBD should be taking. So we take 100 milligrams of CBD, every single person in North America, every single day. We could grow what we need with 10% content plants, and most plants are around 15% on average if you're growing for CBD, on 126,000 acres. Okay, so we grew almost 500,000 acres in 2019. So, you know, there's an oversupply situation. And so because of that oversupply situation, prices fell, no one was able to meet their forecasts, and you know, disrupted a lot of things. You didn't raise as much money as you needed to weather that storm. Consolidation happened. People couldn't keep up with their debt. Farmers were left holding the bag or left with hemp in the barn. And, you know, that was a prolific problem that we saw in the hemp industry. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, that we're having a major correction in terms of who's going to be around to supply the existing market. I think that there's an opportunity for the existing market to grow. The FDA needs to create some guidance for what CBD is and CBD isn't. But that's all CBD. So let's just take that whole bucket of market and what it is, and because that drives your narrative, right? You're the same guy who's saying, well, hemp is weed. Most people are like, well, hemp is CBD, and that's what I came here to make my money on. But there's two other parts of the plant that have tremendous opportunity and have tremendous market opportunities. One is the fiber. So using those fibers that are the strongest fibers in the natural world for automotive paneling, for using them in building materials, construction materials, animal bedding, there's an enormous amount of use for the fibers that are coming off the plant. And then the seed, we have three parts that we get out of that seed: the lipids, the proteins, and the sugars. And those are markets that are growing dramatically and will continue to be around for a long time. So I think that, you know, we grow slow and steady. We're in, as I said, in the oil seed business. We're not trying to we kind of know where our price points are. We know what the market looks like, and we know what we have to do to be competitive. So.
You feel comfortable that there's a correction that's somewhere in the process of happening, and you feel comfortable with the position you're in going forward, and many others in your position.
Yeah, I mean, it's I hate to say that I'm disconnected, but like we're an oilseed processor. So I'm trying to make that distinguishment for you. It's we're not involved in that CBD world that led to the boom and bust, right? We're in the oilseed business, which is, if you want to look to some historical boom and bust, look at, you know, just look at traditional agriculture, look at the run up in canola, the run in soy. It's slow and steady, but it grows dramatically. And we've seen, you know, we've seen cyclical volatility for farmers that related to soybean prices and canola prices. And that'll happen, but agribusiness processors are continuously growing. So there isn't as much of a crazy boom bust cycle. But I would say a lot of the wheat and the chaff has been separated in the hemp industry. A lot of that CBD noise that happened and the bankruptcies that really left a lot of egg on people's face and ruins just crushed dreams. I think we're past that point. So there's probably no better time to come in and see what's left and see where the bodies are buried, because the people that are still in business now are going to be in business for a while, I expect.
So let's talk a little bit about your journey to Kentucky, or I guess just why you chose Kentucky. You're a Southern California guy via numerous other cities, but you're in Louisville, Kentucky. Your plant's in Carrollton. And I know there's been several things written about you guys that talked about why you chose Kentucky. Tell us why. You know, why Kentucky? Did it make sense to start? Because a lot of people, you know, as we've just been going over the last several minutes, thought it was a decent place to start. But why do you think it can continue to stay here? What makes Kentucky unique? Why can it work here?
So first and foremost, you know, my story is one of why I chose Kentucky is really, trained to the existing whys that we see today. And it was basically done with a SWOT analysis in 2014 when the Farm Bill passed. It was, you know, there was Oregon, Colorado, Kentucky, that adopted legislation to reflect federal legislation. And so I had three options. I was from the West Coast. Oregon made the best sense, right? But they had all sorts of marijuana growing in Oregon. And I started reading some stories and following this story about this farmer who was trying to grow hemp, but his neighbors who were growing marijuana were really concerned about cross-pollination. So much so that they ended up shooting the guy's cow, right? And I was like, there's no way in hell that I'm going to start a business that has murky regulation, because it was still on the Controlled Substances Act, that has, you know, starting a business is hard. Starting a business with murky regulations is tough. Starting a business where your farmers, your neighbors are pulling guns on you, I just wanted nothing to do with it. But I had all three states in the SWOT analysis. And one of the things that kept rising to the top of the list was tons of history for Kentucky, tons of water for Kentucky, tons of diverse agriculture in Kentucky, and really, really, really strong support from not only constituents, but legislators. The legislators were only supporting hemp and leading the charge on a federal and local basis, on a state basis, based on their constituents pushing them because of the tobacco diaspora, because of the tobacco buyouts. And so that translated to a great base of farmers who needed another cash crop to grow after tobacco had consolidated into just a few growers' hands, and support for processors to help those transitions happen. And so I'm talking about the Governor's Office of Ag Policy that goes to funding projects that are set up to help farmers transition from tobacco into other crops.
So how's that challenge been for getting a farmer who traditionally has grown something else, pick a previous venture, to going into hemp? When you're talking about a local farmer, not just someone who's backed by private equity or someone who has, but you're talking about just a family that runs a 500 acre farm in Callaway County. You know, that is probably a challenge, or at least, do you convince them of that? Or are they coming to you, or how are you making that happen? Because I hadn't really thought about it from that piece, that the local farmer putting this together was an integral part of start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. When I moved here in 2015, that was 2014, and we got our first crops in the ground in 2015. I mean, that's why I moved from a little town called San Diego, right, to a big metropolis called Newcastle, which is in Henry County. And the judge executive took me under his wing. He introduced me to a bunch of farmers there. And those farmers, you know, embraced the opportunity. They said, you know, let's see what this is about. I got 20 acres out of my 500 acres. I'll help you raise a crop. and hopefully you can get it to market. And so, you know, it was a little bit of what do we have to lose? Corn and soy prices were in the toilet. I mean, less than break-even pricing for, you know, on the national USDA average. So it wasn't like high cotton time for corn and soy like it is now. And they said, let's give it a shot. And so, so I was fortunate enough to have a group of farmers that put together a little bit of a supply chain for me. I knew that my background was in manufacturing. And so I bought some soy, wheat, legume processing equipment. I got some money from the state to buy that equipment. And yeah, we had the genesis of a hemp food manufacturing company that was supported by Kentucky farmers. And it did take, you know, and I had to hustle around and find these guys planting seed and, you know, look up what I, you know, I'm not a farmer, but you know, I worked with these guys to get the information they needed and the contacts they needed to ask, how are we going to plant it? How much nitrogen do we put? How, you know, how wide is the spacing? And so it's been a total learning process, but it's, you know, farmers are extraordinarily open-minded in some situations. And what I'm going to put in the ground is often one of those, but go back to the history. Like this one was already baked into the story because their grandfathers, my granddad grew it for the war. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I heard that, even at the farmer's market when I started selling it. Oh, my granddaddy used to grow hemp, right? Like everyone's seen hemp in and around Kentucky and they knew it was a cash crop. So, which was so ironic to me. And that was the other part that was crazy was we had these legislators, conservative legislators that were embracing cannabis in Kentucky. And I thought that was just so interesting, but it showed me how dedicated legislators were to their constituents.
Nice. That's a great story. I mean, that's awesome. And it's made here again, as we like to talk about in your own Kentucky backyard. Like there is a lot of things that are being done with hemp. We think that, I mean, the opportunities I presume are just endless, and it's just, you have to make it make sense. And as long as you can make it make sense in the market, which I presume you've done your studies to show that, then we just have to get it done. So what we're wanting to do is bring some attention to your business. We're glad you're here. We're glad you're doing things in Kentucky. We want you to be a part of it, and we want to make sure you succeed. So tell us, you know, before we wrap up here, tell us something about your business that you wish more people knew. Or do you want to get word out on, you know, to more farmers? You know, who are you really needing buy-in from for this? It doesn't sound like you need government. It doesn't sound like fighting the status quo is what's killing you. What are you needing? What do we need more awareness of?
I mean, you know, I suppose what we do need is more support for the processing end of it, that because it's an ecosystem that we're trying to build here, and we have to make a determination of whether or not we're going to support that infrastructure, and we need the support of government. You know, where there's other programs that are available, whether it's risk mitigation or it's processing infrastructure or it's a buyback program, there needs to be some support to make Kentucky the center of hemp, which it once was, to make it that again. And I think that, you know, given the business, the economic model that is that's already played out with regard to plant proteins and plant-based lipids and the expansion of population, the need for these alternative proteins, the business case is really, really strong. And it's someone's going to do it, right? They're doing it in Canada. They're putting tons of money into research of processes. And that's why it's so critical that we're engaging with the universities and we're developing solutions. I mean, Victory Hemp Foods has developed a lot of the processes. So we filed 3 patents with regard to our process because we have a novel process, because it makes a better product. These Canadians who have been leading the market for 2.5 decades now have fallen behind Victory Hemp Foods, this little company that came from an idea sprouted out of Kentucky and is creating a better product, allowing us to penetrate deeper into the market with hemp seeds, which means we're going to have more of an impact on a supply chain side of the equation because we're going to need more acreage, right? And so that ecosystem of one of my advisors here in Kentucky early on said, Chad, you're doing, and I was telling him, oh, we're doing genetics and we're doing processing and we're doing marketing of these products and we're selling on store shelves. He said, you got to focus because you cannot boil the ocean. I love that saying, you can't boil the ocean. And so we scaled back. We took our products out of Kroger and Whole Foods and all the natural food retailers like Rainbow Blossom. And we focused on B2B, putting refined hemp protein powders and clarified hemp seed oil into 50-pound bags and 55-gallon drums, right? And getting those ingredients and explaining the functionality of those to companies like Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods and KFC to explain to them how they can win with their consumers by making a better product that's grown here in Kentucky and here in the U.S. from really healthy farms, getting consumers what they need to power themselves through the day. And that message it continues to be true. At this point, we just need to accelerate the growth of it.
Yeah. And there's a lot less moving parts whenever you're going from doing what you're doing. You know, you're right. I mean, whenever you're having to think about the marketing, the places on the shelf, to getting the product there, to getting it down to the margin or the size quantities that they want. I mean, there's so many moving parts to that aspect whenever you're trying to grow your business. I can only imagine, you know, what that could have been like. So yeah, as far as, you know, anybody listening today that you want to get in touch with you, who are you looking forward to get in touch with you? Is it businesses who need a hemp supplier? Is it your local food organizations? Meaning, and by the way, let me ask this question first, local versus regional. How many of your clients that you are getting product to in the B2B world are within 100 miles, and how many of them are all over the country?
Oh boy. Yeah. We're think locally, act globally. Most of our samples, as I said, are going from El Segundo in California to Switzerland. Our samples are spread out across the globe, but we just locked up a distributor in Japan, in South Korea. We're working with companies in New Zealand. So we have a really unique product. And so for that, our products and Chile. So we have products that are going out across the world because of the uniqueness.
Is that where the bulk is going? Or
a lot of bulk's going everywhere. I mean, we work with companies like Patagonia Provisions, Dr. Bronner's in California. Most of it's, and there's some regional food brands that are trialing with our ingredients, and I think we'll see more of that. But yeah, who do we need here in Kentucky? I think that, you know, who we need here in Kentucky is we need, you know, the agriculture industry to step up. So seed dealers, right? People that are working with genetics and getting seeds out to farmers and supporting them with agronomy, leveraging the research that's being done with University of Kentucky, seed elevators, seed cleaners, primary processors. You know, a lot of them have a bad taste in their mouth. They've heard really bad horror stories from the hemp industry, and I think that's unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate. And I think that, you know, as I said, it's still early innings. So we're going to see a correction in that. And it's largely going to be driven from fiber and from food. So if you need hemp for, hemp fibers, if you're a textile manufacturer, if you're using a lot of insulation, if you're using building materials, if you're using fiberglass, if you're using animal bedding, if you have a need for animal bedding, if you have a need for omega-3s, if you have a need for plant proteins, if you have a need for these things, look at the hemp industry, right? Like, it's utilized in so many applications, and a couple LOIs and takeoff agreements saying, hey, this is what the product needs to do on a specification. This is how I need to buy it, right? Whether it's a fiber or it's a woody core or it's a protein or it's an oil. This is the price point that I'm paying. This is what it's going into. We can play in that. The hemp industry needs a shot and saying, okay, well, this is how much volume we're purchasing. Now we can go back and we need to purchase it at this price point. All right, let the hemp industry, give the hemp industry a shot, because we can grow that here in the bluegrass, and we can convert it into the materials and ingredients that these our sister manufacturers are utilizing, and be that first tier supplier that can utilize these materials and ingredients. And I think that, you know, more and more, hopefully more and more manufacturers are thinking, hey, how can I incorporate these products? And it might be a little bit early. You know, there might be some development, but I think it's worth it, because consumers appreciate companies that are utilizing ingredients and materials that are, first off, domestic, and second off, environmentally friendly. And there's literally no better story for your brand, for your products, than utilizing Kentucky grown hemp materials and ingredients in your products. I mean, the environmental and sustainability story is, and I know sustainability is a word that's thrown around by many, and it doesn't have a lot of teeth. But at the end of the day, if you're buying something that's going to improve soil benefiting farmers here in the Bluegrass is I don't think there's anyone that can confront that that's not a positive outcome.
Awesome, Chad Rosen, thank you for being with us today. If I am sitting here listening and I need to get in touch with you, how do I need to do that?
Yeah, shoot me an email, chad@victoryhempfoods.com. Call the main line, 502-230-3221. Ask for Amanda. She'll get you set up. I love having coffee with folks. It's just one of those you know, sitting in person. I mean, we can mask up if that's what needs to happen, but there's just so much to be done in person and having that energy with someone to connect and understand what people are doing, and then understanding how we can interact is something that I hope that we see a lot more of in the coming years ahead. I miss it.
Awesome. Victory Hemp Foods, guys, you heard it here, probably not first, but at least once. And we think that the plant protein agribusiness, hemp food industry, whatever term ends up being the thing that they're sticking with, we hope that it's a thing of the future, particularly given all the things he shared with us today about how it makes Kentucky work. So again, Chad, thanks for being here today. And everyone, signing off, I'm Griffin Meredith with Built in the Bluegrass.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Built in the Bluegrass. We hope you're leaving this episode with a better understanding of the cool stuff made in Kentucky. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to the show. This way you'll get notified as new episodes become available. Until next time.